Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Of course, always check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for past archived programs. You can certainly do that again at veritasmedical.com. And, of course, along the way, if you have any questions or comments throughout the program, you can certainly text those in to us again or call 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. Hey, set sail for health in 2020. That's right. Come go with Dr. Edwards and myself and our families, actually. We're going to have a great time going to Alaska. Now, that's going to be August the 2nd through the 9th. It's a one-week cruise. Round trip out of Seattle, Washington. It'll do the Inside Passage. Our ports of call will be Ketchikan, Dawes Glacier, Juneau, Skagway, Victoria, Canada. Also, we'll have, I think, a day or two on board ship, some obviously free health seminars with Dr. Ben Edwards. And so probably a couple hours at a time and hang out and talk all about your health. And so this is a great time to do that. But set sail for health in 2020. If you'd like to learn more about this, certainly call Envoy Travel today. You can do that at 798-9000, the number to call, 798-9000, 806-798-9000. Talk to any of the staff over there. They'll get you all your questions answered and all that. I will say this about the cruise. It is, we got about, your first payment or your down payment, I guess, if you will, needs to be in by February the 4th. So if you can get that in there, and I would call anyway, I put down a small deposit, a couple $100 just to get my room reserved and all that kind of stuff. Already did that right away. But, prices are very, very good. I mean, interior cabins only start out at about $1,000, per person. That's a really, really good deal. And one other thing I'd mention about this particular cruise, which also saves a lot of money, and that is because it is round trip out of Seattle, your airfare is not going to get crazy. A lot of times when you have these northbound cruises and you just go all the way from Seattle to Anchorage and then fly back out of Anchorage, your airfare gets a little squirrely on you because you're leaving two different cities and that kind of stuff, and gets real expensive on the airfare. Airfare will be really reasonable. I plan to use Southwest Airlines out of Lubbock, Lubbock to Denver, Denver to Seattle. Very, very affordable. So this is really, really a good deal. Airfare not included in that price of $1,000. It's on top of it, but it's not crazy like it would be, I think, coming out of Anchorage. But anyway, for more information, 798-9000.
Well, thank you, Wade, for getting that set up and Envoy Travel. It's going to be a delight for me to go and the family. We've always wanted to go to Alaska. We just didn't think it'd be going like this, but we're super excited. So thanks for setting that up and arranging it. And
you bet, sir.
Excited to give a talk. So
yeah, you like to, and you're going to have a big talk at the Lubbock Wellness Expo coming up January the 11th. You've got a big show there too, Dr. Edwards.
Yeah, and even this Thursday at the Science Spectrum at 6:30, we're doing a big talk, and I think we'll do that monthly at the Science Spectrum. But yeah, January 11th, the Wellness Expo. That'll be a very brief. I got 45 minutes to talk there, which I barely get through my intro on a 45-minute, but that's fine because my goal there is just to get people's eyebrows raised a little bit as to thinking differently about why we're all so sick. And, of course, on the cruise and the Science Spectrum talks, I'll go deeper into the details of that. Thank you for getting that cruise arranged. I'm super excited about that. And we'll do, maybe we'll take a poll on what topics people would like for me to talk about on that cruise. And today's show, today on the radio, also we're going to do a Q&A. I've had a number of questions come in. And one in particular about cholesterol and statins, and we've addressed this, it seems like, a number of times, and there's a number of great books about it, but I know that cholesterol's being the cause of heart attacks and statins being the cure-all, I know that's such a mantra that's pitched, and the drum is beat by conventional medicine so much and cardiology so much, and heart disease is your number one killer. Everyone's so scared of heart attacks. I mean, it's a big topic for sure, and I understand why I get consistent questions about that. Dr. David Diamond gave a fantastic presentation, and I've not looked on YouTube to see if his presentation's out there for the general public. I know you can purchase it. This presentation was at the Weston A. Price conference that I was presenting at also, Wise Traditions. I think wisetraditions.org. You can go and purchase that talk and all the talks there. I actually have been emailing Dr. Diamond. He is so busy with his research. He's a PhD, not an MD. And he's super busy doing research, so he told me he actually doesn't do podcast or radio interviews. But he did send me his entire presentation slideshow. So I'll probably just represent a lot of his data because he did a phenomenal job of just summarizing the literature on where did we get off track thinking cholesterol caused heart disease. And then he does a great job. In fact, he published a study. Him and some other MDs, and it was a review study. So what a review study does is go back and look at what his particular review looked at was every single cholesterol study, statin study ever done. And he shows clearly there's no association. There's no association. LDL and total cholesterol are not associated with decreased mortality or death from heart disease. It's very interesting. So that'll probably be, it could be a talk on the cruise. For sure, it'll be one of my Thursday evening talks at the Science Spectrum. Not this Thursday, but in the future. This Thursday, we'll be talking about iron and oxidative stress and the master antioxidant, ferrooxidase. So our regular listeners here on the radio will know what I'm talking about there. But what I'm doing this Thursday at Science Spectrum is summarizing, pretty much trying to summarize the last year and a half or two of the 30 probably radio interviews I've done with Morley Robbins talking about oxidative stress and excess iron in the body being the number one driver of oxidative stress, and not only driving the flame of inflammation, oxidative stress, not only being the spark and the gasoline for that fire, but iron also puts your firemen out of commission. Your antioxidant enzymes are shut down by excess free or labile iron, and that's why we talk about it so much and why iron is so destructive, because it's hitting you on both sides. It's a double whammy. It's driving the oxidative stress and it's killing your antioxidant enzymes, which are the body's natural defenses to combat oxidative stress. So iron's hitting both sides of it, which is why it's so damaging. And there's no known excretory pathway for iron, as we've talked about. So once it's in you, it's in you.
But you can sort of. I mean, there has been some, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Edwards, where you can fast some of this off.
Fasting does help some. There is a product. In fact, I'm trying to get her, the developer of this product, on for an interview also, hopefully in the new year. iDetox. I stands for iron. And it's a supplement of natural herbal based and vitamin based things that help to shed some of that iron. I mean, you do naturally slough some off. The wall, you know, the lining of your intestine sloughs off, your skin sloughs off, you're just sweating and breathing and digesting. Mm-hmm. You're going to naturally just lose some that way. But it's very, very little. It's about 0.9 milligrams a day, where I think we've talked about a bowl of Cheerios.
Oh.
No, one cup, not a bowl. One cup of Cheerios of multigrain Cheerios has something like 18 milligrams of iron.
That's unbelievable.
So it's really hard to shed and slough. But fasting does pick that up a little bit. And so does this product, iDetox. But donating blood, that's ultimately what you have to do. You'd have to just
do you have to be in autophagy, though, to get that benefit from it? I mean, and again, you don't really get into autophagy in a fasting situation until well over 24 hours.
Yes, that's where you have the maximum benefit. So I know a lot of people just skip breakfast and have an 18-hour fast, and there is some benefit there.
Right.
So that's fine. and you do want to get your calories in. When you are eating in your eating window, which ideally that, you know, 6 to 8 hours kind of is ideal, 4 hours maybe even, but you got to get your calories in. You got to eat nutrient dense food, get your calories in, but just get it in that narrow window. And then you'll get that 18 hour, and that's, and there's benefit from that. For sure, there's benefit from that, but there's more benefit at 24, 48, 72, and beyond. So doing that, you know, a longer fast, 3 or 4 day fast, a couple times a year is very, very beneficial, and will help the iron thing even more. But ultimately, you got to quit eating it, and even if you ate it 20 years ago, standard American diet with iron fortified foods, it's in you. So you need to regularly donate blood. And those that do regularly donate blood have been, studies show, have better health outcomes. So that'll be, I'll try to summarize the whole 2 years worth of these iron conversations in a lecture Thursday night at Science Spectrum at 6:30. And then we'll have ongoing talks every month at the Science Spectrum. So super excited about that. I'm really, I think I said it at the beginning of 2019, that I was going to double down on education, and we have, and we continue to, but now I'm going to triple down on it. Veritas Wellness will be launching in January, and that's a very specific platform for education, a non-medical platform, meaning Veritas Wellness will not be diagnosing or prescribing. We're not going to practice medicine with Veritas Wellness. It will be education and support. The studies are clear that it's diet and lifestyle. In fact, we'll just mention this with the cholesterol. In Dr. Diamond's talk, he showed clearly how LDL and total cholesterol don't cause heart attacks and stroke. He showed clearly that lowering those, artificially lowering those numbers with a drug, do not translate to increased longevity or decreased heart attack and stroke by any significant number. You look at every study ever published, and it's anywhere from 0% difference up to maybe 3% difference in the difference between the placebo group and the group that took a statin. You're talking 0 to 3% difference in heart attack rates. So in the very best circumstance, you'll get a 3% reduction of heart attacks. And that's at the very best. Most studies were less than 1%. And what those studies, if you dive deeper into that data, what it shows is the statins have a very small anti-inflammatory effect, and they have a very small antiplatelet effect, and that is most likely where any benefits coming from, because numerous studies compare patients that have heart attacks, and there's no correlation with cholesterol. So half the people that have heart attacks have totally normal, quote-unquote normal cholesterol by the conventional standards. They've looked at family history of heart disease, and they followed these people for many, many years. And there's zero difference between the normal population and a population of with a family history of heart disease in cholesterol levels. I mean, there's just not a correlation. So the very minimal, if any, benefit is related to anti-inflammatory effects. So that points to something else. What's causing inflammation? We've talked about it many, many times. It's the diet and the lifestyle. Part of that lifestyle is a standard American diet that includes iron. stress, we talk about so much. Stress activates your clotting factors, platelets, fibrinogen, the multiple different proteins in the body that produce clots that cause your blood to be thick or tend to want to clot easier. These clotting factors are associated with heart attack and stroke. So if you have activated clotting factors like fibrinogen, there's a definite correlation between that and heart attack and stroke. There is not a definite correlation between LDL and total cholesterol and heart attack and stroke. Now, the reason your cardiologist is going to say that there is, and the reason I used to say that there was, and the reason the New York Times and Washington Post, and not even, I mean, any new, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, all of them, the evening news, all stations, the reason why they can run an ad that says Lipitor will decrease your heart attack rates by 36% and Crestor will decrease your heart attack rates by 44%. The reason I used to say that, and your doctor's probably saying that, is because the drug reps walk into our office, and in the little 30 seconds between a patient appointment, when your nurse grabs you and says, hey, listen, this drug rep real quick, and sign off on his form that he came by here so we can get some free samples. Or maybe he's providing you lunch, so you run back to the lunchroom on your lunch break and spend a few minutes. And he pulls out this really pretty brochure, or maybe even a poster or a flip chart, laminated flip chart, with a pie graph or a bar graph with this huge bar that says 44% or 36% if it's Lipitor, 44% if it's Crestor. And this very, very tiny little bar graph for the difference in the heart attack. And I've talked about this in a presentation a couple years ago on our Tuesday night lectures. You go back on our website and look at those first Tuesday talks. Statistical Gymnastics is, I think, the name of that talk. But anyways, the difference, and it's actually on the ad, in the magazine ad that I showed in that talk, the Lipitor, 36% decrease in heart attacks for people that took Lipitor compared to people that didn't. Down in the fine print, there's an asterisk, and that asterisk says, in the study, the placebo group, 3% of people had a heart attack. In the Lipitor group, 2% of people had a heart attack. Okay? That 3% versus 2%, that's what I'm talking about. That's a 1% difference. And the difference there is anti-inflammatory effect. It has nothing to do with the lowering of cholesterol. But how could the fine print say 3% heart attacks in placebo group, 2% had heart attacks in the statin group, in the Lipitor group? How could that be? How could that big advertisement on the nightly news be 36%? The big headline with the famous actor, I forget who it was on the ad, but how could that be the big headline that everybody reads, 36%? It's because 36% is the relative risk reduction, and 1% is the absolute risk reduction. So probably the audience is saying, well, okay, doc, what's that mean? What that means is relative risk reduction is a statistical term. I need to look into the history of that term to see who even invented this and who came up with it. But that's all it is. It's a statistical term, and how they come up with it is, and this is going to get a little mathematical, but take, let's go to the placebo group, where 3% of the placebo group had a heart attack. So we're going to use round numbers here. Let's say there are 100 people in that placebo group. That means 97 people did not have a heart attack, and 3% did. So 100 minus 97, that's 3, or 3%. And then you look at the statin group, and it was 100 people in the group. 98 didn't have a heart attack, and 2 did. So what they do is they divide that number, 3% and 2%, and they get the 36%. So it's just a mathematical equation to make it, to artificially inflate this number of 30 to 36%. So if you walked into your doctor's office and he had a poster on the wall that said it had a huge bar graph with a 36% difference in heart attack or reduction heart attack, who wouldn't jump on that? But what if that bar graph were the absolute number or the absolute risk, and there was only a 1% difference? 98 people didn't have a heart attack in one group, and 97 people didn't have a heart attack in the other group. You might say, well, doc, 1% is better than nothing, you know. I'll take the, you know, I'll do whatever it takes, even a 1%, even a 3%, I'll do it, which, by, I mean, 3% is the highest the study's ever shown benefit. Okay, well, we haven't even begun to talk about the side effects or the cost. There's the Crestor study in particular was stopped. A 5-year study was stopped at 1.9 years. They said it was stopped because of such a dramatic difference in the heart attack rates between the two groups. But I've just clearly laid out, there wasn't a dramatic change. When you look at the data, the most dramatic change in the two groups, the group on the statin had double the risk of getting type 2 diabetes. That's one side effect. I don't have all the numbers on the increased risk of dementia, acute renal failure, that's kidney failure, liver disease, rhabdomyolysis, that's a muscle disease where your muscle breaks down, muscle atrophy, that's a weakening and shrinking of the muscles, congestive heart failure, cataracts, cancer. I need to do the numbers because it's going to blow your mind. I think if you add up all these other potential side effects, it's way, way, way more than 1%. So you want to decrease your risk of a heart attack by 1%. And expose yourself to the risk of all these other diseases by way more than 1%. And so this goes back to informed consent. Patients who are offered a medical procedure or medical intervention are supposed to be given full informed consent. That means the doctor educates the patient on the risk versus the benefit. And the patient needs to be fully educated because it's the patient's decision. The patient needs to make an informed decision. But how can a patient make an informed decision if the doctors aren't informed? And I'm telling you, this is how it is. I can remember in Post, Texas at Garza County Health Clinic, the drug rep coming in with that bright, shiny poster showing me that Crestor study of a 44% decrease in heart attack. I didn't even know. I'm ashamed to say, but I can almost guarantee your doctor doesn't know either, the difference between relative risk and absolute risk back then. I didn't know that. And I didn't know to question 44%. Show me those numbers. Show me the hard data. Show me the 100 people in each group, and that 98 people didn't have a heart attack in the one group and 97 in another group. I didn't know to ask that, so therefore I could not go into my patient's room and educate them fully. Anyways, that's a little bit of a tangent on a talk on statins that I could give on the cruise. And David Diamond did an excellent job. I'd highly recommend people get on the wisetraditions.org website and purchase the 2019 Wise Traditions Conference recordings. Not only Dr. Diamond's two different talks on fat and on statins, but also all the other talks were excellent. And we can dive more into the statins later because it's such a big topic and a question I get often. And I'll just end the statin thing for now with this, that what becomes very clear in the literature is the clotting factors are associated with heart disease. Smoking is associated with heart disease. High blood sugar is associated with heart disease. Inflammation, obviously, is associated with heart disease. Stress increases all those clotting factors. Mm-hmm. Sugar increases the clotting factors, and smoking increases the clotting factors. So we'll say the three S's: stress, smoking, and sugar. All that falls under the umbrella of diet and lifestyle. What we always talk about on this show, diet and lifestyle is what's driving all this disease in America. And that's the exact thing that all these studies are pointing to. And statins don't address diet and lifestyle, obviously, and they're not addressing smoking, and statins not addressing clotting factors or sugar or inflammation. I mean, very much. They do impact, statins impact inflammation a little bit and clotting factors a little bit, very little bit, with tons of side effects. And there's way better ways to address the inflammation, the clotting factors. It's de-stressing and it's a low-carb diet, period. I mean, just do that and you're going to decrease your risk. And we can talk more also about familial hypercholesterolemia. These are people with a genetic mutation that makes them have the highest rates of cholesterol more than anybody else. They're genetically just have a ton of cholesterol. Same thing. It's the lifestyle that will inflame that cholesterol. People can have a cholesterol of 300, LDL in the 200s, and their longevity and mortality rates exactly equivalent to normal cholesterol when they don't smoke and don't eat sugar.
To the text line, I've got a couple of texts here, Dr. Edwards. One, is it possible to videotape Dr. Ben's Science Spectrum presentation, please? We cannot all get to Lubbock for one of the 91 seats. I want to share this message far and wide. You're the Cure broadcast help, but the Iron presentation might tell a more complete story.
Yes, we will videotape that.
As long as there's no
technical difficulties, we will have that videotaped. And that's part of the reason for doing these talks is the Veritas Wellness Education Curriculum that we're launching in January and going to be so focused on in 2020. It'll be a lot of video presentations. So, yes, we will do that.
Also, another text, let's see, and cancer, this was going back to what you were talking about, the sticky blood, says, and cancer is also affected by clotting issues, as in sticky blood and fibrinogen?
Yes, because, I mean, what's the root cause of cancer? Again, not according to Ben Edwards, but according to the literature, it's diet and lifestyle. In 98% of the cases, 95% of the cases, depending on what study you look at, it's diet and lifestyle. Well, what's diet and lifestyle doing? It's driving oxidative stress and inflammation. What does oxidative stress and inflammation do? Increase your clotting factors like fibrinogen and makes your blood more sticky and decreases oxygenation of the tissues, makes your mitochondria, your carburetor, gunked up, very inefficient. So your miles per gallon starts to diminish and your exhaust starts to go up. That's cancer. When you ultimately take that carburetor, that mitochondria, to the extreme of the most inefficient carburetor there is, we've talked about how when you eat a low-carb diet and the body uses fat for fuel, you will run that mitochondria, that carburetor, roughly at 140 miles a gallon and make very clean exhaust. That's a low-carb diet, burning fat for fuel. A high-carb diet, the standard American diet, you get your mitochondria miles per gallon down to about mid-30s, 34, 32, 36, kind of some other factors vary there, but mid-30s, low to mid-30s miles per gallon. When you burn carb for fuel and your exhaust is much dirtier. As that exhaust over days and months and years of eating a high-carb diet and that dirty exhaust starts gunking up your mitochondria even more, and you never fast, and you're always stressed, and you're full of toxins, and you never have sunlight, and you're bathed in EMF, and all the other stress factors we talk about. All that put together, you're gunking up your mitochondria even more, and eventually that 32, 34 mile per gallon high-carb diet mitochondria, that carburetor gets gunked up even more to the point it gets down to 2 miles per gallon. It is so damaged and so inefficient, it flips to this third pathway, and I'll just call it fermentation, anaerobic fermentation, where the mitochondria, the carburetor, is not even using oxygen at that point. It's using this primitive energy pathway, kind of a survival mechanism, barely making 2 miles per gallon, and that's cancer. So, yes, that's a long answer to that question. But fibrinogen, sticky blood, low oxygenated blood, all that is associated with cancer, just as it's associated with heart disease, and just as it's going to be associated with every other chronic disease. These are all different manifestations of the same thing. Now, I can't answer. Well, I have some opinion, but I don't know fully why does one person's poor carburetor function, poor mitochondrial function manifest as cancer? And why does another person's manifest as Alzheimer's, and another person's manifest as a heart attack, and another person manifests as Parkinson's, and on and on and on? I don't know that exactly. I have some thoughts, but don't know for sure. But the point is the same. If you really start diving down into the root cause of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and autoimmune disease and cancer and heart disease, it's all right there. It's your mitochondria is not working. You can't make energy very well, and you can't clear your exhaust very well, or you're making a ton of dirty exhaust and making very little energy. And that's why I've latched on with the Morley Robbins Root Cause Protocol deal so much, because that's exactly what he's addressing in that protocol. He's trying to get energy production up and exhaust production down. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, excess iron messes with both sides of that equation so much. It diminishes your ability to make energy, so it gets your miles per gallons down. And iron drives oxidative stress, the exhaust, but then it shuts down your exhaust cleaners, your antioxidant enzymes. Iron shuts it down. So that's why we've latched onto that so much. And fear and stress and unresolved emotional conflict is such a trigger for this whole process to start breaking down. Not only does stress activate your clotting factors, but it disrupts your carburetor, your mitochondria from optimal function. It depletes your magnesium. Magnesium's needed to catalyze so many reactions in the body to keep your mitochondria humming along efficiently and cleaning your exhaust out. So through a number of mechanisms, stress, it jacks up cortisol, and cortisol gets you insulin resistant. Insulin resistance leads to blood sugar going up. Blood sugar going up drives inflammation, oxidative stress. It glycates all the proteins in the body, and glycated proteins are sugar-covered proteins, sugar-covered cholesterol. That's the problem. Dr. Diamond showed a great graph in his presentation of cholesterol your liver makes. The LDL cholesterol, it's big and fluffy. Big and fluffy LDL doesn't cause heart attacks at all. Totally, clearly, absolutely shown in literature. Big, fluffy LDL is awesome and great and protects you. And that's what your body makes. But over time, the big, fluffy LDL transforms into small, dense LDL. And you can get your doctor to measure this. And small, dense LDL, absolutely associated with heart attack. But what gets your normal, native, natural, large, fluffy LDL to change into small, dense LDL that's going to kill you? Sugar, stress, and smoking. That's it. I mean, inflammation, all these diet and lifestyle things we talk about, that's what changes your LDL from big, fluffy to small, dense. So, and by the way, statins, they lower your big, fluffy. They don't lower your small, dense. So you're having an artificial peace of mind. If you're on a statin and you see your LDL drops from 180 to 99 and you think, "Phew, I'm protected." No, that just dropped your big fluffy LDL. It didn't change your small dense LDL at all, and small dense is what's going to kill you. So yeah. Anyways, stay tuned for a future Science Spectrum talk, and I'll give you Dr. Diamond's book when we get back from the break, and we'll answer some other questions, so stick with us.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, if you'd like to catch up on past archive programs. Lots of good information as well, veritasmedical.com. If you have a question on the text line, we'll certainly read that. We'll get started here. Jennifer wants to know, I struggle with slightly elevated blood pressure and have taken 5 milligrams of Lisinopril, was that right? I didn't pronounce
it. Lisinopril.
Lisinopril, yeah. For years. I eat clean, exercise, and take high quality supplements. Do you think increasing my magnesium could get me to the point of getting off the Lisinopril?
Very well could. Magnesium, I've seen lower people's pressures, 5, 10 points, yeah, so easily. And lisinopril, 5 milligrams, is a very small dose, so meaning the effect is very, very minimal. So I think there's a good chance of that. So I would increase the magnesium to bowel tolerance is usually what I tell folks. Oral magnesium, when you get kind of too much in, you'll have loose stool. So that could do it, and just check your blood pressures closely. Make sure your monitor's got new batteries and all that kind of thing, and that you're getting an accurate reading. But you should be able to come off that pretty easily. If you weren't able to do that with just magnesium, then, of course, I'd look deeper into signs of inflammation in the body. And you can do that through blood work. Another indicator to me is, and the blood work would be CRP, C-reactive protein, uric acid, ferritin. These are all markers of inflammation. Hemoglobin A1C, people think about that as a diabetes marker, and it is. It's a 3-month blood sugar average. But if you have any amount of insulin resistance in you, that A1C will start to creep up. You get above about a 5.3, by my standards, you have insulin resistance. A fasting insulin over 5 for sure, but really over about 2 or 3, that's a sign of insulin resistance. And insulin resistance is a sign of inflammation. So these are markers you can look at. Oxidized LDL, that's a marker of inflammation of your cholesterol, but it, to me, is also just a marker of general inflammation in the body. So if any of those show elevations, then you're inflamed, and you need to work on those root causes of inflammation. The number one thing I look at, if you're already eating clean, is iron. Even if your blood test says your iron level's normal, if you have eaten a standard American diet for any amount of your life and not routinely donated blood or had some major blood loss event in your life, then you probably still have excess iron in your tissue. Your blood could be normal. Your blood test could be normal on iron, but in the tissue, there could be excess iron driving inflammation. So just go to the local blood bank and do some regular blood donations. They'll do a blood test on you to make sure you're not anemic. They'll check a hemoglobin. As long as you qualify, you can donate. So just do that routinely. That's a great thing for everybody to do, in my opinion, as long as your hemoglobin's okay.
And you haven't taken the smallpox shot.
Yeah, there's a number of other disqualifying things at the blood bank. And if you do disqualify, then you really need to try to find a medical practitioner who understands the whole iron thing and the fact that iron could be high in your tissue and low in the blood or normal in the blood, and get a therapeutic phlebotomy order. That's the only other way to donate blood, is a doctor's order for a therapeutic phlebotomy. Again, you don't need to be anemic, meaning your hemoglobin doesn't need to be low. And that's something you can talk about with your doctor. And if he doesn't understand what you're talking about, have him call me. Have him email the clinic. Have him listen to this show. Have him watch the iron talk that we're going to do at the Science Spectrum that we're going to video. Then he'll have a deeper understanding. And I'm more than happy to talk to any physician about this thing, this little iron thingy. Another thought, though, you could test your nitric oxide level. There's actually a little saliva test you can get at most natural health stores. There's a supplement called Neo 40, N-E-O, and the number 40. I think that's still what it's called. Nathan Bryan basically came up with that supplement. And it's a concoction of various vegetable powders like beet and arugula and some other things. And basically what Dr. Bryan figured out was there are certain foods that increase your production of nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a tiny molecule that the body secretes into the blood vessel to relax the smooth muscle and to dilate the blood vessel, and that keeps the blood pressure low, prevents it from going too high. Dr. Murad won the Nobel Prize in 1998 at University of Texas Houston Medical School when I was a freshman there. And he won that Nobel Prize for discovering nitric oxide. Dr. Bryant went on, a student of his, went on to figure out these vegetables that help produce nitric oxide. And he came up with a supplement full of those vegetable powders, basically. And it can increase your nitric oxide production and therefore lower your blood pressure. However, that, in my opinion, would be the green version of lisinopril. The deeper question is, if you are low in nitric oxide, why? Why is your body not producing its own nitric oxide like it was designed to do? Like people with normal blood pressure's body is doing. Why isn't your body doing that? And I'm going to give you one guess. Inflammation. Inflammation is going to knock out nitric oxide production in some people. And therefore, the blood vessel can't dilate and you will have high blood pressure. But it all boils right back down to inflammation and what's driving that, and it's going to be diet and lifestyle related. Iron is a sneaky thing that it's hard. You know, this person said they're eating and living clean, and that's great. But check the iron. And then sometimes there's other occult drivers of inflammation. We had Dr. Griffin Cole on talking about the mouth, gum disease, root canals, gingivitis, mercury in the silver fillings. All these things in the mouth can actually cause systemic inflammation in the body. And you won't even know it. I mean, if your gums are bleeding, obviously you know that. If you have an abscess tooth, you'll know that with pain. But you can have occult infection, especially root canal, old root canal teeth, they have anaerobic bacteria. Those are bacteria that don't require oxygen. And root canals often, almost some dentists would tell you always, have these anaerobes at the base of the canals. And because you cannot completely, a dentist cannot fully sanitize that tooth. It's a dead tooth because a root canal procedure kills the blood supply. It kills the artery. If you don't have blood supply to any area of the body, it's going to die. That's obvious. And the tooth, a root canal tooth, is a dead tooth. It's a dead tissue in the body. Gangrene sets in. Gangrene is these anaerobic bacteria. But the anaerobes secrete toxins, really, really, really nasty toxins, in the order of almost as nasty as botulism and anthrax. Dr. Boyd Haley, University of Kentucky, did a study on all the top biological warfare and just biological toxins in general. And these anaerobes in the mouth produce some of the deadliest, worst toxins. And the body reacts to those toxins via the inflammatory response. So consider your mouth if you're still inflamed and you think you're doing everything else right. Last week's guest, Dr. Plourd, talked about how EMFs drive oxidative stress. So you could be doing everything, quote-unquote, right, even donating blood. And if you're sensitive to EMF, which she told us last week in her experience and her research, people more sensitive to EMFs tend to be the ones that had some kind of insult earlier in life. She mentioned amalgam fillings, the mercury. She was heavy metal toxic. You know, you could be drinking heavy metal in your water your whole life, and that can be the insult that makes you EMF sensitive. Mold exposure in a sick building syndrome, it's called, and black mold growing behind a sheetrock wall from a faucet drip or a pipe leak behind a wall that you can't even see. But the mold secrete toxins, just like the bacteria at the root canal tooth secrete toxins. And that can trigger inflammation in the body. The immune system turns on to fight that toxin, and it's invisible to you. You don't even know it. I have a patient, actually, who feels horrible every time she goes into her own home, and there's been a known leak in the basement, and probably there's mold. I mean, if there's a water source, a leak, there is mold. So those are some thoughts on what to look for for sources of inflammation in the body that could drive blood pressure up. But hopefully the magnesium will do the trick. Keep it easy. I had another question. This was an email question earlier in the week about wheat germ oil. We recommend that. It's part of the root cause protocol. I know it recommends that. Wheat germ oil is a great, maybe the best, food source for vitamin E. And you want to try to get a food source for all. If you're going to have to supplement a vitamin or a mineral or nutrient of some sort that you're lacking in your diet, that's what a supplement should be. If your diet's lacking, you have to supplement the diet. That's what ranchers know with their cows. If they're out on pasture all winter and that grass doesn't have enough protein, they're going to supplement some protein during the winter. They probably don't need to when the grass is growing green in the spring and summer because there's more protein in green growing grass. They may need to supplement their cows with a mineral block that has a particular ratio or blend of minerals if they've tested their cattle or their grass and their land and they know that it's low in copper, for instance. We had a cattleman on here that told us that. His cows were consistently low in copper when they even did biopsies of the liver of these cows. Copper was the number one nutrient deficiency. So they supplemented the cow's diet with copper, and then the infertility rates went away or improved, and immune system improved, and abscesses went away, and all these great benefits in the cows. Same with people. If your diet is deficient, then you need to supplement. And so anyways, whole food vitamin E, wheat germ oil is a great source of whole food vitamin E. And the question was, hey, you always talk about how bad wheat is, so why would I want to put wheat germ oil in my mouth? Well, the oil from organic wheat, that's oil, that's fat, that's full of fat-based vitamins like vitamin E. That's totally different than the protein called gluten, which is actually a number of proteins. It's in a different part of the wheat seed, so the wheat germ versus the rest of the seed. So what people are reacting to, this new modern gluten, that's a different part of the wheat. It's not in wheat germ oil. People also react to the high carb, high starch content of the new hybridized wheat. React to it, meaning their blood sugar goes up significantly when you eat new modern wheat. Which, by the way, when you eat not only wheat, but just sugar and carbs in general, the body turns all that into glucose. The liver takes glucose, turns it into fat. We call it triglycerides. and triglycerides back to cholesterol. It's the high triglycerides on the cholesterol panel that your doctor's drawing that's probably the most important number, that and the HDL. So a high-carb diet directly translates to high triglycerides. That is just how the body works. If you eat too much starch and carbs, and everyone knows this. I was talking to someone last week from Lebanon or some other country in the Middle East, and they said, oh, yeah, well, everybody over there knows. If you want to fatten up, you eat the rice and the corn and the white potatoes and the grain, and if you want to trim up, you quit eating that. It was just like this common sense. And that's what we've lost. We've lost our common sense. How do you fatten a pig up or a cow up? Why do we send them to the feedlot to feed them grain, to fatten them up? I mean, it's common sense. Same with human beings. We don't need to check our common sense at the door when we walk in our doctor's office. But that's what happens. It's how the body works. You eat a lot of carb, the liver puts this carb into triglyceride packages, so it's basically fat floating around your blood, and that's associated with increased heart attack and stroke. How do you drop triglycerides? This was the big conundrum for me. I was always scratching my head and then kind of banging my head against the wall in my conventional medical practice because I could never really lower triglycerides that much or increase HDL. I for sure could drop your LDL and total cholesterol. Statins do that. Too bad I didn't know it didn't translate to decrease heart attack and stroke. But my point is there's a drug that'll lower the LDL in total. There's not a great drug that'll increase your HDL and drop your triglycerides. What does that and does it beautifully and wonderfully? A low-carb diet, almost guaranteed. Quit eating carbs and sugar. Your triglycerides will drop from 250 to 80, and your HDL will rise. Add a little exercise, and your HDL will rise more.
Real quick, couple of texts before we wrap up this morning. I don't know if you have time to get into it or not, but thoughts on biomagnetic therapy, one question. The second question, different question. We take the root cause protocol but don't know about the wheat germ oil.
Okay, it's just a good source of vitamin E. The wheat germ oil. It's not in the first few stages or stage one or two of the root cause protocol, so some people don't get all the way down into stage three. So it's not stressed as much. It's not one of the key players like retinol, which is another fat soluble vitamin. Vitamin A is retinol. That's what's in cod liver oil. Much more important, I think, and the quantity that you need is much higher. So I think most people can probably get enough vitamin E just from a normal diet, but some people can't, especially if you're still inflamed. Do the full protocol. Do the whole thing. Do the vitamin E, which is the wheat germ oil. And then the biomagnetic
therapy.
Therapy. I'm not real quick on not familiar with that.
Biomagnetic therapy.
No, I can't really speak to that. I mean, it sounds like it's more in that quantum realm, and our body really is an electrical body. There's a book called The Body Electric, actually, and we've talked before how at the very, very deepest levels, we're just energetic frequencies. I mean, these atoms and electrons, and then you get into subatomic quarks and tachyons and all that, and it gets to be where we're not even particles anymore. We're just energetic waves, and that's where all these different, you know, the magnets and different light therapies and energy healing modalities come in, and I'm definitely not the expert of that. I know a lot of things affect that, and so I'm not saying there's not some good stuff with biomagnetic. I'm just not familiar with that particular one.
Okay. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, you're the cure. Of course, you can catch it every Monday. By the way, you'll probably be off next Monday, right, because of holidays. I have a Christmas and
that is
everything.
Right.
I think we're going to be gone next Monday.
Yep.
But are you...
Actually, the next two Mondays.
Two Mondays you'll be out?
Play a recorded show.
Okay. Well, I'll be off next Monday.
Be back in the new year for sure. But okay. Y'all come see us at the talk this Thursday at Science Spectrum at 6:30. And then January 11th, the big Wellness Expo at the Civic Center here in Lubbock. And then the Health Cruise, August 2nd through 9th.
Yeah, Health Cruise, of course, if you'd like to learn more about that, contact Envoy Travel today. Again, you can do that at 798-9000, 798-9000. They'll get all your questions answered. But it's a week-long inside passage to Alaska, Ketchikan, Dawes, Juneau, Skagway, Victoria, Canada. Round trip out of Seattle on a beautiful ship, Emerald Princess Cruise Line, August 2nd through the 9th in 2020. You'll have, of course, health seminars at sea with Dr. Edwards. Be a lot of fun just hanging out. So we're going to have a good time. Good ports of calls and good excursions. Lots of cool things to see. But again, contact Envoy Travel today about that. 798-9000, 798-9000, area code 806. They'll be happy to get you hooked up on any questions you have and get your minimal deposits in now, and so we get this thing rolling. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a sellout. They always are. But anyway, appreciate it, Dr. Edwards. Listen, Merry Christmas. Have a great New Year. We'll see you back here, I guess, Monday the 6th.
Yes, sir. I'll be here.
You'll be back in studio.
Thank you for another great year on the radio.
Yes, and thank you for being with us. Have a wonderful, again, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. We'll see you back live in studio on the 6th. I can't believe we're saying this. The 6th of January, 2020. Amazing.
Yes, it is. I'm excited for the new year, but thank you again. Y'all have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, too.
You do the same, sir.